Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is something I hadn't really delved into the Mac Jones DUI that he got as a true freshman back in 2017. But since we're talking about Justin Fields and the NFL draft and quarterbacks, Mac Jones, it doesn't seem like his DUI is going to hurt him at all in his draft evaluation. A lot of people have said, hey, this actually was kind of a turning point in his life. He got super serious after this, and he just changed a lot of things about the way he operated. So it's not one of those things that happens, you know, when you get a DUI 1 month before the draft and all of a sudden people feel like they might have to reassess. But did you look at the picture I sent you, Wade?
I did not look at the picture. I didn't click on it because I wanted to be freshly surprised on air once I looked at the picture. So
I don't know if
let me click. On
I don't
it
know
right
if
now.
I okay. I'm gonna have you click on this. This is the mugshot. The mugshot of Mac Jones when he was a true freshman, 17 or 18 years old, after he'd gotten in an accident and tested positive for alcohol afterwards, or failed a DUI test. I don't know if I can have this guy be my football. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I know they did all right at Alabama, but I think he's crying. Looks like he might have a cold sore or something. This looks like a kid. He's got the Bama haircut and everything.
Yeah, he's got the haircut going. He
looks like
is that snot? Is he sniffling? It looks like he.
Oh yeah, because he's got it on the upper and the lower lip.
Yeah, it's like it's dripping down. I don't know if that. You said that you think that might be a cold sore or something. I think it's snot.
I think you're right.
That's snot just dripping down. and that doesn't make his case any better either. Like, I would much rather him have the cold sore than you having you have the snot dripping down your nose in the mugshot. Like,
you know what probably happened? I bet it was the photographer. It might have been a female officer. Uh-huh. And sometimes if a female officer shows you any kind of sympathy at all, then all of a sudden the waterworks – or not a female officer, but a female of any kind. When she shows you even like the slightest little bit of sympathy, it brings on the waterworks. And she probably was like, here, honey, have a tissue. And he just lost it there. There's parts of me, I feel empathy for the kid because it looks like his whole world is collapsing and all he can think about is, boy, Nick Saban is going to cart my ass out of here.
Can you
in
think
a
about that? Like, Mac Jones is, you know, he goes to the University of Alabama. This is the best of the best situation that you can be in as far as being in college football. And he's feeling like he completely ruined his opportunity going forward. And he learned from it. I think that's the big thing. Like, he had this negative thing that he put himself in a bad position, put himself in a bad spot, got reprimanded for him. He's got this mugshot out there that people can pick on him about for the years going forward. But at the same time, he changed the way that he operates. He changed the way he does business. And so if you're an NFL team, you look at that and you say, all right, this kid made a mistake and he learned from a mistake and then he moved forward and got better because of it. That's the type of people that you want in your building, because you're going to make mistakes as human beings. That's just part of the deal, part of life. You're going to make mistakes, especially when you're young, dumb, and full of, you know, the rest of that stuff. So he learned from it, and so I think he can move forward. I think Mac Jones, but this picture, if I'm his teammate, this picture is going to make it on the rookie talent show night. Like, that's going to be on there. Like, he's going to get made fun of because of this picture.
Right. This is where this is the advice I would give to kids if I were out doing the motivational speaker tour. I'd be like, hey, don't do drugs, be smart, nothing good happens after midnight, all that stuff. But if you do get arrested, try to have a badass mugshot, because there's something. I mean, you can be Frank Sinatra and you can have that mugshot, or you can have, like a Tiger Woods mugshot. Which, like, none of Tiger Woods' mugshot does not look good at all. Now, he got his later in life. He'd already made his way in the world. If Mac Jones had a badass mugshot, like, if he had a kind of that look of, like, you got me, copper, or something like that. I might feel a little bit better about him as my quarterback, as long as, you know, he had done all the other things and he had learned his mistake and gone on and become a better person for it.
Right. You would think that you would look at him with more of a positive light and look at him like, all right, this dude, he's a little baller out there. But hey, the picture is what he is, and he is what he is, and we're gonna move forward.
Wade Smith filling in for Sean Pendergast. Sean, I'll be back tomorrow. Wade, you brought something up when we were talking about the Astros, and really about the only good thing about the Astros yesterday was that it was a 2 p.m. start. And afternoon baseball on a weekday when you actually have time to watch it is probably one of my favorite things. It always catches me by surprise. I always forget. Even when it's the last day of a series, for some reason, it's always a huge surprise to me. So it's like a little Christmas present that I get to open in the afternoon and sit on the couch. You brought up two other things that might compete with that, one of which was a Sunday noon kickoff or Saturday college football 11 a.m. kickoff as being like the absolute best start time. So weekday baseball at 2 p.m., Sunday noon kickoff in the NFL, or Saturday college football at 11 a.m. kickoff. And you're going to run that poll on your Smitty, what's your Smitty all day? Smitty all day.
Smitty74 all day on Twitter. Yeah, I'm gonna put this poll out there during the break when the next break comes up, so y'all can look at it. But hit us on the text line 713-572-4610, or like he said, Smitty74 all day. In memory of or in honor of Sean Pendergast, me sitting in his seat here for the last couple of days. We want to pull out a Pender poll or maybe a Smitty poll on this thing, because you look at it like, I'm watching the game yesterday and I'm like, there's nothing like day baseball, like especially early on in the year, because you haven't been seen. Like when you get to, you know, when it's game 100 of the season, it doesn't have the same luster as it does because you've been watching baseball for months and months. But early on in the year, when you got day baseball and it's early in the season, you like there's really nothing like that. But then I got to think to myself, like, what about 11 a.m. kickoffs in college football? Like if you're driving up to College Station, or you're going to Austin, or you're going down the street in the Third Ward to watch the Cougs, or whatever it may be, 11 o'clock kickoff, is that your best? Is that the best from start to finish experience as a fan if you're there in person? Like, which one is the best?
Oh,
like tailgating, going to the NFL game tailgating, going to college football tailgating. Like, there's so much to it when you actually go to a day baseball game. I just was kind of thinking, like, what is the best sports day experience for a sports fan?
I think the in-person part changes it, because I think if I were to say the best day of watching sports, if you're on the West Coast and you roll out of bed and there's 10 a.m. football, I like that a lot. When I've been on the West Coast on a Sunday and being able to just watch an entire day of football and still get to bed on time too, that's pretty cool. Like, you can watch Sunday night football and it's not ridiculously late. I like that. To actually go to a football game, and now on the West Coast, when they don't play them at 10 a.m. on the West Coast, so I guess that's not really relevant. I don't like the early starts for actually attending a game. I feel like,
for which sport? Any sport?
For football.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why baseball for 2 p.m. or any time in the mid-afternoon for baseball, that's about perfect, especially because you can work in the morning and then go have a nice lunch and hang out and then go to the ballpark early and just enjoy the actual day, especially if it's the perfect temperature at Minute Maid.
Yeah.
That's about my favorite time in sports. I would say that, at 2 p.m. And I would include in that, like, going back to watching college baseball games when I was in college. Like, that's some of my favorite times in the spring were just hanging out. We could go up and you could get on the parking garage and watch from our parking garage over our college's baseball field.
Yeah.
And, you know, sneak your beverages up there and everything. Baseball's got it beat, hands down.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you. Like, if I had to pick one out of these three, like the 12 o'clock noon kickoff for NFL, I've never experienced it myself. Like, I drive up and I see people out there tailgating. And I've experienced as like an ambassador and going to the events and doing a tailgating, and it's cool, the 12 o'clock kickoffs, but I feel like going to day baseball game, when you mess around and say you have to work, or if you don't have to work, but you play hooky, from you might take your kids out of school so they can go to the game early on. Like, there's nothing like that father-son, father-daughter moment where you get to take them out of school early and they get to go to a baseball game. So that would be my choice. But answer that on Twitter and on the text line. I'll be posting that after this next break.
So how are you feeling right now about Mac Jones actually going to the 49ers? Because Mac Jones became again the odds-on favorite last night. And I don't know if that had anything to do at all with Justin Fields revealing that he has epilepsy. I don't think that it did. I mean, these guys have just been kind of wavering. Are you completely sold, like so many people seem to be, on Mac Jones definitely being the guy?
If he's the guy, then I'm looking at the San Francisco 49er, their front office with a side eye. Like, what the hell are y'all doing? You traded up to get Mac Jones? Like, you could have stayed where you were at. You didn't have to trade up that high to get Mac Jones. I'm not sold on Mac Jones. Like, Mac Jones is an accurate quarterback. I watch Mac Jones and I say to myself, name me the quarterback from Alabama that came into the NFL and was successful that would warrant a number three overall pick. Like, I see Tua.
Yeah.
I watched Tua last year in this one season, but I look at him, I'm saying, is this guy going to be, you know, a top quarterback in this league? I don't see it. Maybe he'll become it, but I just don't see it. I see Jalen Hurts. These guys are solid, but are these guys going to be top quarterbacks, you know, top three pick in a quarterback type quarterbacks? I just don't see it.
The problem with that line of reasoning is you could say that about almost any college. Like, where is the – which college is the franchise quarterback factory? There's so few and far between. What happens is a lot of the really good schools, they do have guys who have great college production and that they end up obviously falling short of expectations in the NFL. But then they're almost harmed just by virtue of – like, I can't look at Mac Jones and hold Tua Tagovailoa or anybody else that came before him against Mac Jones. You got to evaluate each one individually.
To evaluate each of them individually, no question about that. But when I look at Alabama receivers, more likely than not, even though they're put in perfect conditions, they're going to do well in the NFL. Alabama running backs, even though they're put in perfect conditions while they're in college, they're going to do well in the NFL. I haven't seen that out of the quarterbacks, because I look at Alabama players in general. They're being put in the perfect situation because they have great coaching. They have great players around them. When they step on the field, usually they're the best team every time, position by like from position to position, which is not the case when you go to whatever NFL team you're in.
Well, but for one, Trent Richardson. But two,
he went way back. He went way back.
Long time ago. Like, that was less than a decade ago.
Trent Richardson, that was like 2000 and like 4 or 5 or something like that, right? He was a long time ago, wasn't he?
Trent Richardson, no.
Was he like 2008, maybe? The last 4 or 5 Alabama running backs have all been good. Josh Jacobs has been good. What's my guy in? Derrick Henry's been good. Mark Ingram's been good. Like, the running backs from Alabama recently, since Alabama's been really winning national championships, they come in the league and they ball.
Trent Richardson was 2012.
Was he really?
Widely regarded as one of the greatest can't-miss prospects ever.
Yeah,
how could you miss going?
2012. I would have never guessed that. I put him at 2005.
The problem is, though, Wade, you're using the same theory that people had about spread systems a while back. These guys, you can't take a quarterback from a spread system because they all are disappointments. What had happened was because guys had prodigious college stats and spread systems. Yeah, a lot of people had great expectations of guys that and you could point out, just because you break an NCAA record doesn't mean that you're going to be good in the NFL. It didn't mean that no spread quarterback could be good in the NFL because he wasn't prepared for it. All it meant was that, like, yeah, a lot of these guys are probably elevated higher than they should be because of their college production, but you can't hold it against Pat Mahomes, perhaps, that he played for a spread system. So with Mac Jones, it turns into, okay, you do have to find those instances where conditions weren't perfect, where things weren't right, and then there is just some absolute guesswork where you just can't tell, yeah, what's he going to do when he doesn't have the two best receivers in the country on his squad?
I just when I see him and what he did in college, I don't see him being the number three overall pick. That you trading up to get that guy just doesn't make any sense to me. So will he end up being the pick? I mean, crazier things will happen, but to me, I think that's Justin Fields' spot to lose.
Jose Urquidy made one fatal mistake before the game even began yesterday afternoon. I recognize it because I've made the same mistake myself. We'll talk about that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
So the Astros dropped one to the Rockies 6-3 yesterday. It just continues a ridiculous and miserable skid. But as Brian McTaggart pointed out, they started with the identical record last year and went on to win 8 games. So I'm hanging my hat on that. I think we're going to get Yordan back, Altuve eventually. Bregman looked more like himself yesterday. And at some point, some of these relievers will start pitching more than 4 or 5 innings at a stretch. Jose Urquidy, though, I got nervous about him, Wade, right from the get-go, because he was out there on the mound with no sleeves and his shirt buttoned down. Looked like he wasn't even wearing an undershirt. And I've done that before where you go out on a super cold day. You know, and in football, super cold is when it's like 15 or so.
Right.
And you're like, I'm not going to wear sleeves. That's dumb. I'm going to be tough. I'm going to be a tough guy. And then midway through the second quarter, I'm such a stupid idiot. I'm not. This is the dumbest thing I ever did. The wind is blowing. I can't feel my arms. That was really, really dumb.
But see,
and Urquidy laws, he didn't quite have the same control he typically does.
So I think the problem with Urquidy is he probably didn't put Vaseline on his arms because I don't know if it's illegal in baseball or not to put Vaseline on your arms. But
yeah.
When it's really cold, it's better to put Vaseline to clog up your pores on your arms opposed to wearing sleeves, because when you wear sleeves and it's cold and you start running around and you start to sweat, then that wetness stays on your arm. So that's why, we try to make it seem like we're being tough by not wearing sleeves as far as offensive linemen, but it's actually a smarter way to go if you put the Vaseline on your arms to clog up those pores. At least that's what I was told by veterans, about 20 years ago.
Yeah, that is the Vaseline on your arms, silicone on your shoulder pads until they crack down on that, and you're all set. I think he ended up going to a sleeve. He put a sleeve on in the third or fourth inning, and they said that he was looking all right in the bullpen. And I'm guessing when he was warming up, he had a sleeve on. So I don't know. It's everything so miserable about the Astros right now. I was even trying to figure out, who from the Astros do I loathe? Who am I disgusted with on the Astros right now?
Yeah.
And I really can't come up with one. I can't be disgusted with Miles Straw. Because
he is what he is.
Nobody had expectations of Miles Straw. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good point. He is what he is. When Kyle Tucker was struggling and it didn't look like he was going to come along last year and everybody was frustrated with him, I was disgusted with Kyle Tucker because he's one of the chosen ones. He was untouchable.
Right.
Jeff Luhnow wouldn't have touched him.
Would not trade him. Yes. Yes.
Right. So you get frustrated. Kyle Tucker's also kind of got that lopey way that he runs and everything, where he feels like he looks like he might not be taking it seriously enough.
Yeah.
So when he wasn't doing well before, you thought, okay, this is just some dumb kid that doesn't even understand the situation that he's in. Forrest Whitley, I'll get disgusted with Forrest Whitley because he's a disappointment. But yeah, Miles Straw's been exactly what everybody was afraid he would be. He's a liability at the plate. And he's fast, but he's not necessarily a great outfielder.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll develop into one, but he's certainly no Jake Mariznick. Jake Mariznick, you could be getting better offensive production out of Jake Mariznick. I'm not saying great, but better, and also getting awesome center field play.
Yeah, when you talk about finding an Astro to hate or to loathe right now or to just not feel good about, the problem with the Astros is they just have a very likable team. When you look at the guys on the team, there's not anybody that you say to yourself, that dude is full of himself, or that dude, he doesn't try hard or whatever it is. There's nobody that I can look at on the Astros where I say to myself, man, I don't really like dude, or I don't mess with that guy or anything like that, which is a good thing. You just hope that they can get out of this slump sooner than later so they don't fall too far behind in the race of the AL West. If you fall too far behind like Seattle or somebody like that, now it's going to be tougher to catch back up and get yourself in a position where you're playing home playoff games in the first round of the playoffs. And I know it's early in the season, but what I'm seeing out of Astros right now is everything that could possibly go wrong is going wrong. Having to put multiple guys on a COVID list when you already had lost a couple of games in a row. That's not good. That's not good for business. That's bad for business. You're not going to get out of a slump when you lose, you know, a handful of your best guys. And so once they get back, I think they can go through this lull while they are, while they're not at full strength. And you can kind of explain that away. But once everybody gets back full strength, they're going to have to turn that corner very quickly so they can get themselves back into striking position to where they can be where they need to be towards the end of the year.
Well, that's where, I mean, some of it has been bad luck. Like, the advanced stats will show you. And they talked quite a bit about this on the broadcast yesterday. And Blum's always super cool about it. It's not like Blum does a really good job of playing the homer role without sounding like a ridiculous homer. You know, like, Blum always sounds apologetic sometimes when he's talking about the advanced stats and everything. But they are, like, they're hitting the ball hard. Sometimes you're just hitting it exactly to where guys are, or you're hitting it into the shift. So it's not like they haven't made contact. And I think the bats will come around. It's just a matter of, are they going to come around enough to undo the damage that, say, a Joe Smith can do, or that any of those other relievers can do? I don't know. That's what I worry about. And because we're not talking about I have no fears that the Astros are going to be a 65 win team this year or anything.
Right.
Are they going to win the division though? They're three and a half games out right now. It's early on, and I'm not going to try to worry too much about that.
Yeah. As baseball goes, that you go through lulls, you go through streaks. There's a lot of ebbs and flows when it comes to the season. Right now, the Astros in their downtime, and like I said, once they get back full strength, that's when you got to expect them to turn that corner and get back on track.
The starting pitching is the biggest concern. I think the names everybody was comfortable with going into the season, you weren't comfortable with the experience total, but I don't think that anybody would have expected that of the three total quality starts that there have been by the Astros, all three of them have been by Greinke. the Astros ERA right now among starters is a 4.52. Without Greinke's numbers, the starter's ERA balloons to 5.25. That's from Brian McTaggart at MLB.com. That's something that's got to change, and I think it will, and guys will start going a little bit deeper. The slow starts by Miles Straw. Straw, I anticipated it. Tucker has hit the hell out of the ball. He's hitting the ball hard. At some point, he's going to start either sending those out of the park or they're going to start hitting holes. And then it's just a matter of the pitching catching up around him.
Yeah, you're seeing that the Astros starting pitching is missing Fromber. Like, Fromber was supposed to be a guy that you looked at was going to be a key piece to the rotation. And him, you know, going out with the injury, I think that's affecting things a little bit. But you thought you were going to get more out of Odorizzi early on in the season. He's a veteran guy that's been successful in this league, so him getting on track is important. Lance McCullers becoming the Lance that we remember him for, I think that's important. And you know, Christian Javier, he got sent down. I don't know if he's going to get brought back up, but right now the Astros, without the starting pitching, you can't have bad starting pitching and not be hitting the ball. That's how you lose 9 out of 10 games. They got to get that part corrected, and it's not like they're going to be able to go outside of the building really to supplement that. I think at this point they're going to rock with who they got, and so the guys on the roster got to play better.
Oh, you know what? Somebody brings up a name, an oldie but a goodie. Somebody says, "Who knew I would long for the days of Joe Biagini?" if only so you could have somebody to hate. That's the
yes.
I would have just bring on a scapegoat. If they could bring out a scapegoat, somebody to be a real bum, then at least I could hate one of these guys. Because now with Kyle Tucker being in the fold and a guy that I actually like, I've got nobody to hate. And I feel bad for Miles Straw more than anything. Like, I just want – there's something about him. He just looks like the little scrappy kid at Little League that runs his ass off all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, you want him to succeed, but it's obviously not going well for him. Coming up next, we've got Brandon Scott, our own Brandon Scott, who's been covering the Deshaun Watson case on the website extremely well, is going to join us just to get everybody up to date. If you try to check out, let you know exactly where we are with all of that, because there is a potential Tony Busby press conference today that we don't have a whole lot of details on. Brandon Scott will get us caught up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast is out for the day. Wade Smith, former Pro Bowl offensive lineman for the Houston Texans, is filling in. And joining us right now to talk about all things Deshaun Watson and the scenario he finds himself in is our own Brandon Scott. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I got my head on a swivel trying to keep up with 22 cases. 22 cases. So needless to say, I'm tired and trying to be as attentive as possible.
Well, this is and Wade alerted me to this, that Mark Berman last night had tweeted out that Busby says there will be a press conference today with some of the women who have been accused of lying by Rusty Harden. I guess you've followed the Busby's announcing of news and when he's going to drop information and everything closer than anybody else. Do you actually expect the press conference to be today? Do you get any kinds of – does he send you some kind of a heads up before you get it?
So what this is, what Berman is referring to is actually a status conference, which is pretty common in civil cases. I think it's pretty common in pretty much any legal case that you have. And it's really just – like what it says, it's an update on the status of the cases. And if y'all remember last week, or maybe it was the week before, whenever they decided to identify the accusers, whenever the judges ruled that, along with that, they also agreed that all of the pretrial motions and hearings would occur in one court. They would consolidate it all. And then once it goes to trial, if it goes to trial, then all those cases would go back to their original courts that they were filed in. So all this is, my understanding is that it's not a press conference. Now, that doesn't mean that a press conference isn't coming or that we won't get something like a press conference at some point during the day. But my understanding of what's happening today, and I'm still trying to get the details on it, honestly, is that this is a status conference for the attorneys and the judge just to update themselves on, you know, where they are in terms of motions, filings, evidence, just where they are with the case, I guess, more generally.
Well, based off of Berman's tweet, and normally he's on it when it comes to getting inside information and finding out what's going on, keeping his boots on the ground. Like, based off of his tweet, there's going to be 12 of the accusers there in person, specifically for the reason because Rusty Harden called them out as liars. And so I would think that although this is supposed to be kind of a ho-hum, run-of-the-mill status conference, I would suspect, since it's Busby running it, that it's going to be some theatrics today. Are you looking forward to that? Are you expecting that in his side of the table?
So anytime that you have either Busby or Harden involved in a case, Tony Busby or Rusty Harden involved in a case, I'm expecting some form of theatrics. If you put both of them into the mix, I'm definitely expecting theatrics. And I can tell you, I'm really interested to see how all of that plays out, the scenario that you described and that Mark Berman described in his tweet, because I was there for those hearings that I just referenced earlier, a couple of weeks ago, and they were pretty nondescript. They were for the most part, with the exception of a couple of cameras, pretty much like non-event. You know, there were none of the parties were there, and there's no need for them to be there. That's another thing that's important to remember. Like, there's no reason for Deshaun Watson or for any of the plaintiffs to show up to any of these pretrial conferences or for any of these filings for motions or anything like that, because that's what the lawyers are here for. So it would be unusual for even one party to show up, much less to have, you know, a dozen or more of them there. So it would be symbolic. I wouldn't expect to hear from them or anything like that. But yeah, that would be dramatic, and obviously that would put more, the thing that we don't have is, you know, more faces to these names. Like, we only have the one face. If we were to see 12 or 14 of them, that would be quite the visual today.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point, because we saw how much it changed just by, I don't think it was coincidence. It was after Ashley Solis gave her tearful statement that's when the sponsors really started dropping for Deshaun. Brandon, who's our Sports Radio 610 insider, Brandon, you were a court reporter before you went back into sports full time. It Yep. seems like so far things have been moving. This is just my impression as an outsider that knows very little about the legal system. It seems like things have been moving kind of at a breakneck pace because there have been so many suits filed and whatnot. Are we approaching a period where in a normal case this would actually start to get mired down and there'd be a whole lot waiting for more the trials or motions and everything?
Yeah, we're definitely at that point. I think that, you know, just going back to the answer that Rusty Harden filed earlier in this week, which was, you know, the first official answer to a lawsuit of the 22. You know, there is legal, and the lawyers would back us up on this. There's an actual time allotted through the law that, you know, between times of, you know, having a lawsuit filed against you and filing your official answer. And so that was the date. Like, Monday was the deadline, the date to do that. So that was more, you know, it wasn't as breaking as much as it was procedural. That was a calendar thing, like no different from a football game being scheduled on a particular day. And so we're going to start to see, I think, more of that, like, you know, more of the, you know, like the whole motion to have them refile and to strike. We're going to see more of those, I think, like more of these kind of, you know, insular, very particular issue-based kind of filings that speak to particular issues that they're trying to address. And I think the kind of the interesting part about that is up until now, we had been relying on statements, you know, Tony Busby and his social media post and whatever statements that Rusty Harden issues publicly. But, you know, who's to say that they're going to do that for everything that they file? So this is the point in the case where if you're following the cases through the Harris County District Clerk's website, like I am and like, you know, most of the reporters are, this is the time to be checking and refreshing and looking at those cases every day, because, you know, not every one of those filings is going to be something that they're going to want to necessarily broadcast.
Brandon, we just got word, I guess this was yesterday, that Antonio Brown settled his sexual assault case that had been going on. It started in 2019, and now it's finally resolved in 2021, and that was one case. When you look at that case and then you compare it to Deshaun Watson, that has 22 cases against them that are all civil currently, like how does the fact that it took that long to resolve that single case, do you think that plays any factor into how long we could expect this to go with Deshaun Watson, or how likely he's to settle quicker than later if he settles at all? Like, do you think there's any correlation there between the two? Because they're both NFL players that have been accused of similar things. It took 2 years for the NFL to investigate that matter, and they still haven't closed that investigation. Of course, the NFL is investigating Deshaun Watson right now. Like, do you see any kind of correlation between the two situations?
I mean, I think that every case is different. That's important to keep in mind. But I do think that it's somewhat symbolic of just how slow the justice system can move. And that's, I guess, on the civil or criminal side. Like, these things don't – it's funny to me a little bit that we've been doing this thing. Can they get this done before the draft? You know, how can they figure this thing out before the draft? Man, that ain't how the justice system works. They're not, you know, it's not happening like before the draft. You know, this could very well, as you point out, could last months, years, who knows? So I'm honestly not sure what to glean from Antonio Brown's situation as it pertains to Deshaun Watson, but it is an antidote. It shows you, hey, these things take a long time. And the number of cases, the one thing I will point out about that is, you know, that just stands out. That's just the one case. The other element of this is the criminal side of it, and that, you know, at least we know that at least, you know, a couple of these are being investigated on the criminal side. That system seems to move very slowly. And the again, what stands out to me about that is that presents, at least for me right now, until they eliminate some of the possibilities, that presents, in theory, 22 possibilities, or at least more than one possibility, more than two, more than three, more than four or five possibilities of a criminal case that you don't know when that's going to pop up, if that's going to pop up. So the big word, and I've been saying this every time I come on, the big word with the Deshaun Watson thing is just uncertainty because of the volume of cases. There's so much uncertainty on what direction each case is going to go in.
Well, and I guess, I mean, because the entire legal system, because of COVID, is so beleaguered, and then now that they are operating, they're doing it through Zoom and everything. On the criminal side of things, I guess you're kind of painting a picture of the DA probably has like manila folders stacked up on their desks of potential cases that they're looking at and investigating. And does it being a high profile case expedite things at all? Or do they pretty much, maybe because it's a high profile case, they actually have to really follow protocol more and just have it sit in line, I guess. Does it get expedited at all because it's high profile?
Yeah, I would like to think, and I'm pretty sure that they would like for you to think that it wouldn't be handled any differently. But it's hard to think that it wouldn't, right? You know, considering that, you know, politics and so many other things factor into, you know, our institutions, right? Our systems. And so it would be hard to think that somewhere higher up that there's not some pressure to find a resolution to this thing one way or the other. I could not say for sure, but you would think that there would be some pressure somewhere about that.
Brandon. Oh, go ahead. Wait.
Brandon, we were speaking to Brandon Scott of Sports Radio 16 here on Payne and Pendergast. And Brandon, when you look at the answer that Rusty Harden put out the other day, a few days ago, what was your initial takeaway when you saw and read through that answer? Because from all reports, it was not a run-of-the-mill answer that you would see in a normal civil case. What was your biggest takeaways from that answer by Rusty Harden?
That was it was the one thing that I feel like I could back the lawyers on. Like, the lawyers are the legal experts. But as somebody who kind of follows their work, or whose job it was to follow their work for some time, like, I can back up what they're saying about how peculiar it was to see a narrative or like an explanation. Like, the run-of-the-mill answer to a lawsuit is just a general denial. Like, they'll go point by point, however many points are presented in the original complaint. They'll just go point by point and say, okay, point one, we generally deny everything, you know, that's set forth in this allegation. And then point two, point three, and so on and so forth. And they just give a general denial without specifying what happened or what they believe the truth to be. They just give a general denial of what's going on or what's alleged. Whereas, and that's for the most part, and I haven't read and looked at nearly as many of these answers as most of the lawyers that we've talked to have probably filed and reviewed. But from everyone that I've looked at, and that's, again, a limited number, I've never seen that. I've normally only seen just, like I said, the general denial. The fact that there was, like, never mind what Rusty Harden had to say and the substance or validity of anything that he had to say, but the fact that he said anything was surprising. Then you take it a step further, and that he's, you know, for the most part in there just going, you know, picking apart not each woman, but a certain number of the accuser's stories. Like, that definitely surprised. I don't know if it should have surprised me, considering it's Rusty Harden and things are being done a little bit differently and nothing is really conventional about the way this case has gone. But yeah, no, that surprised me. And, you know, quite honestly, even though I was expecting that document, I wasn't expecting to read a lot or learn a lot from it. And we certainly did. There was a lot of juice there. So yeah, that was surprising.
We're speaking with Sports Radio Insider Brandon Scott. You can follow him on Twitter at Brandon K. Scott. Brandon, okay, so take off your court reporter hat and put on your sports bro hat and just tell me this. Based on everything you've learned from yourself as court reporter, chance of Deshaun Watson being traded before the draft, is it still pretty much zero?
Yeah, I'm gonna go right at about zero. Right at about zero. Like, I found it a little comical, honestly, when it was, you know, the reaction was, oh, this makes it better. This makes it easier for a team to trade for Deshaun Watson. No, it does not. Like I understand that we're breaking this down kind of in a play-by-play way, like who won the day, who wins the day, you know, like it's some kind of seven-game postseason series or something. But that's not how it works. I mean, Deshaun Watson is still fighting an uphill battle and is still up against it. You know, like there's still 22 women who are accusing him of, you know, obviously these aren't light allegations. And so, like, I don't see how my biggest thing was with Deshaun Watson, like, as a sports bro, is when can you put Deshaun Watson in a commercial again? When can you say, hey, guys, hey, fans, hey, public, we're having a football game this weekend. Come watch Deshaun Watson play in it. Like, you know, until you can do that as a league and specifically as a team, I don't see it. I cannot see it. Like, something has to change drastically. Like, Rusty Harden can't just win a day or have, you know, filings that impress people or make people think, and then that just kind of solves it all. That'll fix it. No, you know, it's not that at all. So something's going to have to change drastically for Deshaun Watson for a trade possibility to even be something that we can consider. And that change would be, honestly, either A, him settling out of court and no more details coming out about any of this, or B, somehow he is completely exonerated and this is, found out to be some kind of farce or something like that. Like, those are the only possibilities that exist for a trade to happen within the next, what is it, week?
Yeah, just exactly a week, a little week and a few hours. Hey, Brandon Scott, thank you for joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at Brandon K. Scott. And, of course, follow our Twitter account at the station, Sports Radio 610, for all the updates and news that you need. Really appreciate it, Brandon.
I'm enjoying y'all, fellas. Y'all have a good one.
All right, buddy. Boy, you know, one good point that Brandon made, and it's true, was that when Rusty Harden delivered his response, I think there was a tendency – by a lot of people to say, well, hey, look, he's got answers to 14 of these women, so that takes care of those 14 lawsuits. Like that was going to be it.
Right.
Oh, they've got a good response, so they've got a reason or a story, so that must be it. That must be over. It does, and you do. It's a natural human thing. You go back and forth with it, and you respond to each one like somebody just landed a punch in a boxing match or something.
Right. Eventually, somebody's going to have to hear all this and see all this evidence and decide which one is more likely to be true or false. And so, although there's going to be evidence on both sides presented, there's going to be a group of people that's going to determine what is accurate and what is inaccurate. And just you seeing it for the first time as an outsider that's not part of a jury, it has no bearing on the actual, you know, how the evidence is going to be presented and how it's going to be taken in by those that are ultimately making the decision.
Except that in this case, I guess the one difference is that because I think at least part of Busby's strategy would be to make Deshaun as uncomfortable as possible.
He's got to put pressure on him. That's what he's doing. He's putting pressure on him.
Yeah, if they're trying to get him to settle. But we've got plenty of time, everybody, for all of that. The draft is coming up. Everybody, myself included, is sick of hearing about how Tom Brady was just a sixth-round pick, and, hey, you can find a Tom Brady. Now, you're not going to find Tom Brady in the sixth-round pick. But Caserio was personnel director for some really good late-round picks when he was with the Patriots that maybe the Texans could actually pull off. We'll tell you what they are next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.